Welcome to Soundwalker. This is episode 5, Fleinvar, Where You Listen. This is your host, David Rothenberg. I'm here at a place known as the Arctic Hideaway, or in Norwegian, Fordypningsrommet, which kind of means deep place, or depth place, or get into the deep place. I'm here with a group of mostly Norwegian artists. We're working on a project called The Sad Truth, part of the upcoming Nordic Music Days in Buda, a small city here in Arctic Norway. And we are here investigating sound truth, what it means to listen. You're going to hear a series of artists discuss sounds that mean something to them. In order, it's going to be Tina Sure Lange, Bjarne Kvinsland, myself, Girid Nordahl Kaldestad, Håvard Lund, founder of this special institution, the Arctic Hideaway for Fordypningsrommet, and then the Swedish visual artist Leif Haglund, and the North Norwegian visual artist Espen Tversland. That's the crew. Let's hear some sounds that mean something deep to all of them and what they have to say about these sounds.
The American composer John Luther Adams often speaks of his time with the Inupiat people in Alaska, and they would speak of going to the place where you go to listen, a particular spot where the shamans would go to take in the sounds of the Arctic environment, to listen for their ancestors, to hear things everyone could hear and other things only certain people could hear. And we've all gathered on this remarkable spot, the island of Fleinvær, here in the Norwegian Arctic. It's very beautiful, special structures built to inspire contemplation and collaboration. This is certainly a place where you go to listen and go to create. And we're wondering what sounds matter to all of us here. We are artists, visual artists, sound artists. What sounds matter to us in this spot? What makes a sound that's important to us as artists, listeners, musicians, composers? So we're going to ask everyone here about a sound that makes sense to them, that they want to explore, that they want to use, that they want to reveal to us in their own unique way. Tina, tell us about this sound you don't even have yet, that you know is going to be so good.
I have a big fascination for radio towers and flight control towers, where you have these amazing metal objects that are erected from the ground and then suspended with these metal wires. So of course they have a function, but as an instrument it's super interesting. There's a lot of sonic qualities to these suspended metal wires. So I've been recording quite a lot of them, and I know that this one here at Kleiner would probably also have quite a lot of sound and a very rich texture of sound world, which is just there for me to explore. But then there's also the context of it being a flight control tower. So the context of the sound will also color how I will perceive and work with it.
So what you're doing is finding musical instruments and places and things that might be designed for something else. So you're not just looking for sounds, you're looking for things to play that maybe were designed for something else. So you're going to find instruments and things that were built for another purpose.
I definitely have a big fascination for the world being one big sonic playground. And through listening and focusing on listening, we'll probably find a lot of very interesting objects around us, whether it's tools from our kitchen or the nearby flight control mast, or if it's just the nature itself as a mountain stream or the wind.
So do you have any advice for people who want to learn how to play something that's not supposed to be an instrument? What do we need to know when we approach a possible instrument?
I think you have to have the kind of child's curiosity and dare to do something that is not regularly mainstream. Like, you have to dare to go and pluck something that is not an instrument just to see if it makes any sound. Maybe not be so concerned about what things are made for and instead be open for what it can be.
Important for the listener to know where the sound comes from?
Not necessarily. I'm a big fan of contextualism, so for me context is extremely important. So for me it would be very different to listen to a sound recording of a bird if I know this bird is recorded somewhere where it's not supposed to be, or maybe it's recorded in, for example, a former prisoner camp from the World Wars and something like that. So for me, context is extremely important. But I also think it's nice to keep the listening experience a bit neutral for the connotations that the listener self brings to the table, because we're all different, we all have different experiences, and we'll probably have a lot of different experience with the sound.
Any more questions from the round table?
How do you connect your visual work with the sound? Is it also in a conceptual idea? Or?
It depends a lot on what I'm working on. Mm-hmm. But for me, the listening environment is very important to the listening experience. For me, it's very natural to want to control the environment the sound is in, is presented in. So that's why it's so natural for me to work with visual elements, because it will color the listening experience, and basically I'm very concerned with the listening experience itself. So
Bjarne, what is that sound?
It's a bird. It's a bekkasin, we call it in Norwegian. And I was kind of... I didn't really expect to hear that bird here, because it's a mountain bird and an inland bird. And I thought... I didn't know everything about the birds there, but... It seems like it's also just got there recently. So it's tell how also birds are migrating and changing how they live. And this particular bird was actually lying on its nest and trying to scare me away. So I respected him as well. There were two of them. And also, I'm kind of fond of the, not just the beautiful bird songs, but also the more, the richer bird songs that has like the more rhythmic ones. And this bekkasin also has a cousin called the double bekkasin, which is has even better sounds. But I enjoy this little male bekkasin because it's he has an attitude. He He stands up and tries to scare me away, even if he's just a couple centimeters long. So, of course, I, as a sound collector, I always enjoyed birds. They are everywhere in Norway. But still, it's always new things to learn about them, and also new ways to listen to them, and also new ways to use them in music. So that's why.
So what would you do with a sound like that?
I'm quite into heavy digital signal processing. Mm-hmm. I would like to really just use this as a sound that I can create to something else. I could transpose it and granulate it. I could use it in different contexts. I could really analyze the rhythm in it and try to write that out and use it for instruments. Or I can just use it as it is. I would probably do all of them, mm-hmm. if I will use it musically. And also, it's always important for me to know the history of the sound. So when I collect the sounds myself, and everyone should collect sounds, the mobile phones are perfect to collect sounds. And to know the history of a sound and collect sound is a fun thing to do, and it opens your ears up to nature in different ways. If you try it, like, use them like in a very grid-like, structure-like rhythmic sound, you immediately lose the quality of it. If you keep the micro rhythms in the sound, it will sound so much better.
So you're saying there's like a natural rhythm we can learn from the sounds we find out, rather than fitting these sounds into a rhythm we think should be there.
Yeah. I think that's a lot of young composers try to fit all these sounds into rhythm they already have, instead of listen to the rhythms inside these sounds.
And why do you think people do that?
Because they have a rhythm in their head before they start collecting, and they want to fit things into what they think of is their kind of music. But it's important for when you listen, or I think it's, I see myself as a virtuous listener as much as a
virtuous listener
as much as a composer.
Right.
And I use this when I collect sound. You have to go to listen deeply, and you have to know what you're listening for.
Are you a virtuous listener or a virtuoso listener?
Virtuoso listener.
Like as a master of listening.
Yeah, I think
how do you get there? How do you become a virtuoso listener?
I think everyone can be trained in that, mm-hmm. of course, in listening to music, or listening for structures, or listening for... I don't say that I'm better than anyone else. I think listening is something we should train on as well as to... Mm-hmm. I don't think you can be a good composer without being a good listener. Mm. I know composers that maybe are not that good listeners. See, it goes through their music as well. Mm-hmm. So to train to listen is an exercise you can do in nature, and everyone can do it.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. I want to talk about the same sound.
Okay.
Because actually, you know, here we are on this Arctic island. It's not actually full of huge amounts of different sounds that you immediately think is there. There's not hundreds of singing birds here, different species. There's a lot of wind, there's water. But there's remarkably not so many creatures that we hear at first. And this bird is unusual. And for several reasons, to me, this is a Bekasing, is a snipe, the common snipe in English. And although the common snipe is not all that uncommon, it looms large in childhood mythologies of kids who've been in the Boy Scouts like me, because they always would tell stories about the snipe hunt, which was like a game you would play. These camp troop leaders would send you on a snipe hunt, and it was a hunt for an imaginary creature that didn't exist. We get all worked up, we'd go wandering around at night, we'd find this snipe that isn't really real. It's like a stone soup or something, or you know, looking for imaginary creatures, and after a while you realize it's all made up. Except I remember as a little kid being surprised to discover there was such a thing as a snipe. You know, it was this little bird that wasn't so uncommon, like they were around. So what's like musical about this thing? You know, it sounds like a synthesizer. It's so electronic sounding, you know, and that we live making music in a world of we're used to weird sounds. It's not a weird sound. It's obviously a musical sound. So when I think of what I would do with this sound, I'm gonna start recording what's happening here. First, I might take out the noise, the background noise, make it more pure. So then I might take a version of it just playing here. You could change the speed, slow it down different ways. Change the pitch. Different ways of changing the pitch. Then might turn it into a kind of instrument to play, load it up and just sort of perform it. See how that works out. I feel like the sound, something of this rhythm hidden inside. The bird is in there. And I might mess it up some more and try to turn it into a more strange instrument, like this, where you kind of tweak it as it goes. You know, I like to turn these sounds into instruments where you kind of tweak parts of the sound that are less obvious. You don't expect, like, you're not just filtering out the frequencies, not just adding effects, but kind of just extracting bits of the sound and where you don't quite know what's happening or what you're doing. I don't want to know exactly what's affecting the sound, but I really like to play it. I like to turn it into an instrument, just as Tino has to play the objects we find in the landscape. I would like to take these sounds, turn them into something to play, and see where that goes.
It's important that the space planet, with all its overtones, is used in that way, in the richest way of the way it's built. It's an instrument which is could be played over 5 to 6 octaves, if in case you work a lot with it. And in the end, you get so free. It becomes less and less an instrument in the right meaning of the word. It's more and more me, if that could be said. And first now, in the age of soon 50, I'm starting to find multiphonics, for example, interesting. To search for the things that's between my clefs, to play with not only the fat sound that my natural mouth creates with this tool, but to be able to play with more types of sound, and to be able to play with different kinds of overtone structures. Is that understandable? Everyone in a single tone of these.
Mm-hmm. Can you demonstrate that for us?
I guess not now. I guess no, because I have just recently started to.
Well, just in any sense, you can demonstrate it for
uninitiated. Split multiphonics, which I just recently started to find interesting, is that. Sounds like that. I'm a newborn when it comes to sounds like that. And the clarinet is a cylindric instrument?
Yes, cylindrical bore.
Yes, while the saxophone is a conic.
Exactly.
Yeah, and as you know, since you're all a clarinet player yourself, you can easily kill one symphony orchestra with a saxophone. It's a brilliant invention, the saxophone. But it's also a clarinet that has totally other possibilities. Since it's cylindric board, and what else to say? It's
how does it feel to specialize in an instrument that most people have no idea exists? Bass clarinet. You ask people in the street, what is a bass clarinet? They'll say there's no such thing.
Yeah, well, in Norway, they always ask, what kind of trumpet is that? So the level of knowledge is kind of not existing anyway. Mm-hmm. No, it's because of the old tone structures, you can easily blend it with anything, both string instruments and other wood instruments I use it rhythm, like a rhythmical instrument. This could be. Suddenly, you can invite a rapper into the session.
So you're not only a bass clarinetist, but you're the creator of this incredible environment. How did a musician end up creating such a place? Why? What brought you to create this unique space, this beautiful location?
I'm more than half interested in psychological mechanisms, and it's transferable to everything. What you see, what I have seen from travels and concerts and meetings with other people, is transferable into architecture. And I've created the words behind it, but of course other people have drawn it and made it for me, but and my owners, co-owners.
So when you first described it, what did you say? What were you looking to create?
Yeah, well,
in simple forms, I know it's...
Since I don't have the ability to lie, I must say the first thing I said was that it needs to be shown in wallpaper. But forget that now. Mm-hmm. But and of course it went that way.
You
but
mean, it was going to look incredible.
It was,
it was going to be Instagrammed everywhere.
Yeah, but because it's a kind of... the meeting with nature...
Mm-hmm.
The main idea behind the place was to give a group like this, like us here now, the possibility to work in nature-given long lines. It would have been other results, I think, if we have sat in a black box in Bodø in the culture house. Totally another. Built as a working place, because I saw that I kickstarted my years from 2008 till we started here in January with 3 days of work in scenery which reminded about this, and I saw that a good working day or 3 good working days took away kind of 3 weeks of work. So it's also is efficiency is positive all the way. Of course, it also works very fine for recreation and reset, to reset all your senses. Yeah, even your appetites comes back, gets better, because your eyes can rest, and that's where I have spoken about noise. And that's one thing, but the visual noise today is so incredibly disturbing. Where you find that screens, all the screens is not, the eyes are made far much better than the screens are made. So you get exhausted by looking, but you don't know it, by looking on a screen. I mean, look at that screen.
Yeah.
It's Horizon and it's Newfoundland and is next. Takes one week with a quite speedy boat. But,
right.
I don't think you hit Iceland. I think you also miss Greenland. Direct to Fogo.
Mm-hmm. Of course, the difference between... your beautiful studio buildings here, and then say Fogo Island, which is a slightly related environment, is this collective space, like to work together. This is very designed that people come together and do something, which is clearly what's, you know, happened. You know, everyone's working around the circle here, doing something together. And that's kind of a surprise to me. I didn't expect it to be like that, looking at the pictures. And it's interesting.
Before building, I also saw that one thing was the kickstart I gave myself, but also to work in parallel sessions is good for me. And I've done parallel sessions with engineers working on the PhDs. If you take away the language of the specific, can you say subject language, then in the end, the trouble solving is totally equal.
Mm-hmm. In different fields.
Yeah.
The way problems are solved is common around many different disciplines.
And as we have touched this week here also, it's needed now to have more gatherings, cross-field gatherings, if that could be said, to break up long lines in science to get new ideas on topics like sustainability and food and all those small things in the world and life. And it works.
The sound of my father rowing his boat. One of my favorite sounds in the world, I think. I'm concerned with sound memories. When I work with field recordings, I work with sound in different ways, but when I work with field recordings, I think sound connected to a memory or something emotional is important to me. That's the way I use it myself. And, yeah. And I tend to like composers or music collectors or artists that work with sound in a way that it's not necessarily that you hear what the sound is, but it has some kind of meaning for them to use exactly this sound.
How do you learn that meaning if you don't hear it?
That's a good question. By reading about the work they did, like underwater sounds.
So like the you'd like to know about what you're hearing in addition to hearing it?
It could give it a new dimension, but it's not necessary to enjoy the experience.
No,
no, absolutely not. And this sound, I just use it in different kinds of ways. Coming here is kind of an experience of looking up and listening out, if you can use that expression. Because listening to the surroundings is, for me, an experience of listening far. I think in cities, you tend to kind of look straight forward and listen 1 meter out around your head, or maybe you have earplugs just to avoid listening to the traffic and to be completely in your own little world. And I find that a bit disturbing in cities, and interesting to watch how people forget that they actually are a part of a society, because they lock themselves into sound and also looking on their phone. I do it myself, forgetting that I'm actually in a community. So I think being in a place like this reminds me to open up my senses in a way that I tend to forget in the city.
So what would you do with this sound now that you have it? It means so much to you, memory. What comes next for you and the sound?
I would probably just process it in different kinds of way to just use the texture in a way. I would probably filter, put different copies of the same sound on top of each other with different filters.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe pitch them a little bit. Just small variations of the same sounds. I think that's my main focus when I work with this kind of sound. Ambient music makers. If you work with an analog synth, you slightly change the filters to make like small changes. I think I would do that with this sound. Trying to work with only one sound source to see how far I get and how slow changes I can make to make like almost unhearable changes. Yeah.
So what happens to you when you are able to hear an almost unhearable change?
Oh, it gives me goosebumps. I think it's like you're listening to Eliane Radic. His music is like that. She's a fantastic French composer. And it's so small changes. It's really, really fascinates me. And I think I also try to adapt that way of working to working with amplified objects and try to focus on those small changes.
I happen to have a quote from Eliane Radic right here. That's in this book that I got in Berlin. And she writes the following. Time is of no importance. All that counts is the duration necessary for a seamless development. My music evolves organically. It's like a plant. We never see a plant move, but it's growing continually. Like plants, immobile but always growing, my music is never stable. It's ever changing, but the changes are so slight, they're almost imperceptible and only become apparent after the fact. So this is your music, her music. It's all about like attuning yourself to very subtle things that maybe most people would miss unless they take the time. You think that's part of it?
I think that's part of it, yes. I actually attended a concert with Eliane Radic's music in Oslo at the Ultima Contemporary Music Festival. A crowded 100 people in a room listening to her ARP synthesizer, very, very, very slow changing drones. And there was a composer, older composer, sitting next to me, and he started to sing on top of it. Quite interesting. Just adding what you think was music.
Did anyone complain, or they welcomed it in?
I was thinking about it, but I didn't. I also wondered, is it like when you're in a bus, or I sometimes, what if I just stand up and sing, but I don't do it, you know? And maybe he was just thinking he did it, or I don't know, he just did it. It was kind of beautiful and very strange and a bit rude, but interesting experience. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we have two more people?
Yeah.
Well, I've been working with computers since 30 years. And thought it was a wonderful tool to make images, pictures. Now I'm back to basic. I use charcoal, Indian ink, soft pastel, which is just powder on paper. And in a way, colors and forms are connected to sounds. I'm a visual artist, I'm not talking about it. So, it's quite difficult to explain it in words. But for me, the colors have a sound quality. They're loud, they're screaming, they're ugly, they're and making a picture it's like playing in band. When you listen to all the others playing around, and it will fit together as a whole, it's a wonderful feeling. And it's the same with when I'm making pictures, drawings. If I let my control and my will go away and just listen and see what surrounds me, then I can work with the picture as a partner, as a band, with its forms and colors. So that's a wonderful feeling.
So what made you return to charcoal after 30 years of using the computer?
In a way, the computer didn't have any context. No tactile feeling, no smell, no sounds. And in a way, it's a screen. When I do a charcoal drawing, it's in the room. I can meet it. It's with me in the room. If I do the picture in the computer, it's behind the screen, in a way. Some other place, not where I am. But I'm a visual artist, and I've always been.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with very much different things, film, theater, operas, for advertising, for buildings like this. But it's always visual.
So as a visual artist, how do you make use of sound?
Yeah. Yeah, in a way I can hear the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not actually hear it, but I connect it to the sound. So picture can be very loud, so when I see it. Munch made me a visual artist one time when I went to art school. I always thought it was fun to draw and make pictures and so on, but I never understand why until I saw a big exhibition in Stockholm 1975, and then I think I got my tinnitus. Then I knew.
Good job. You can hear that sound spreading through the classroom, and every student is using the pencil. You can listen like their flow, concentration. They're really working. And it's very beautiful. I live in a place sort of like this, except from the nice architecture and dark cars. So the nature is still spectacular, and you can take it into you, because we are so isolated as a group, and we can share the experience, and we connect, I think, to the nature and to the sounds and to the work that we are doing here. And this connection, to be present in where you're standing and take it all in, is how I perhaps use sound in my video works. I want the sound to put you in front of the video, sort of. So you are connected to it in an emotional way. And also I think the body takes the sound just not only by the ears, but by the feel of the vibrations and stuff, that we get emotional, like when you played in the under the pear, I just got tremendous joy because of the way it sounded. It was fantastic.
Thanks for listening to Soundwalker, Episode 5, Fleinvær, Where You Listen. We're here in the Arctic, listening to the sea going onwards, and we'll catch you next time, wherever in the world you happen to be listening.